It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a message from sponsor Intuit TurboTax. Taxes was dealing with piles of paperwork and frustrating forms, and then waiting and wondering and worrying if you were ever going to get any money back. Now Taxes is easily uploading your forms to a TurboTax expert who's matched to your unique tax situation. An expert who's backed by the latest technology, which cross-checks millions of data points for 100% accuracy. While they work on your taxes, you get real-time updates on their progress. And you get the most money back guaranteed, all while you go about your day. No stressing, no worrying, no waiting. Now this is Taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile app. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writing excuses.
Season 20, Episode 2. This is Writing Excuses.
Q&A on a ship.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Howard.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Dan.
And we are joined by Mark Ashiro and Kate McKean here on Navigator of the Seas. Hey, Mark, tell us about yourself real quick.
Hello, everyone. I am a young adult middle grade author of some books that have won some awards and been on some lists, and I'm trying to pet every dog in the world.
Short and to the point. Kate, tell us about yourself.
My name is Kate McKean. I'm a literary agent at the Howard Moorheim Literary Agency, and I'm very excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you, and our students here at WXR, right on the Navigator, have been excited all week to learn from you guys. This has been awesome, but they still have some questions. So let's turn it over to our students and have someone ask a question.
Hello. How do you know when a character is taking up so much space in your book that they need to die and possibly never have been included in the book at all?
Restating the question, how do you know when a character is taking so much space in your book that they need to die and maybe never come back?
So one of the things that I look at is the same things that I look at. I evaluate the character in many of the same ways that I evaluate a line. Is it redundant? Is the character doing things that other characters are doing? Is the character related to the general themes? Does the character fit the tone of the book? Those are things that it's the same kind of metric, but you're just applying it to a different sort of experience.
One of the things that I do in this case and in many other cases, anytime the outline goes off track, is ask myself, do I need to get this back on track, or is this a better track than I had in the first place? It could be that that character is taking up so much space precisely because you love them and they are more interesting than what anything else is going on. And so you might need to just retool a little bit and let them be the star.
I've also been in some cases where those two guys should be one guy, and you can just give all of that stuff to one guy and then cut what you don't need.
Yeah, any instance I've ever had where I've had to completely excise a character, the question became, if I take this character out, does it actually affect the story? And if the answer is no, bye, goodbye, throw them overboard to fit the metaphor of where we are. Please don't throw anyone overboard.
No crimes
on the ship.
It's funny because I was just thinking about the other side of that, which is it's possible that the reason that this character is taking up so much space is that they're filling a role in the story that there's nothing else there to fill. Like, they're the one who is advancing story in a time where no one else has that plot information. They're the one representing the character's, you know, backstory because there's nobody else to talk about. And so maybe the answer could be that you could either add other characters, give part of what that person is doing to other characters, or figure out if there's a way that the story can hold it. Because you don't want to, like, knock out the supporting wall of your house because you don't like it, and then be like, oh no, it all fell down.
I come back to the tripartite definition, the protagonist, the main character, and the hero, who can all be the same person, but they can also be three different people. And if someone has taken up a huge amount of page space in a story and they are not filling the role of protagonist or hero or main character, then I am well off outline. I'm now writing a different story, and it's time to figure out which story this character actually fits in.
So if you're writing a new book and your plots tend to be very plot-focused, what are some tricks to making the book more character-focused?
Restating. So if you're writing a book and the story is very plot focused, what are some tricks to making it more character focused?
A question I ask myself, actually, because I'm also an outliner as well, is very early on in my process of developing an idea, is who is the most interesting person for this plot to happen to? Instead of just creating a character or whatnot, think of, you know, possible, not just possible conflicts, but like, what's a contrast? What's a very interesting contrast of this happening to a specific person? And that often can help me find a way in to a much more character-driven story, still within a very plot-heavy story.
One of the things that I'm similar to Mark, but one of the things that I will specifically look for within that is why the character doesn't just nope out of the plot. So that for me then means that being on that plot fulfills a lack, a hole in the character. It's doing something for them. And that can usually allow me to find out what it is that they're missing, what it is they're lacking, that they can be on a journey for separate from the plot, but that the plot is intersecting with, and that that's part of why they're moving forward.
Exactly. Like, if they are on the plot because it fell in their lap, it is... they can easily nope out of it, but they have to want to be there for a complex reason. And if the reason is too simple, you can make it more complex, and that will deepen your, at least that character.
I also sometimes think about what is it about this character that gives them the ability, not only the desire, but the ability to participate in this plot? What is it that lets them take the action that moves this plot forward? And what is that rooted in? What is it that they're bringing with them to the plot that makes them an interesting person to be advancing it forward? And then for that interesting thing, what's a way that you can work in somewhere where we see that area of interest outside of the plot? Where can we see it on, you know, in a side scene or something else that's not necessarily plot focused.
You just reminded me of something that one of the other tools that I'll use is to look at the character and ask, why are they uniquely unsuited to solve this problem? And that, again, opens up a lot of tension and just a lot of juicy, juicy stuff.
So let's say you have some really cool, awesome world-building thing that you want to fit into your story, but it just doesn't quite do it. How would you balance just ripping it out and just saving it for another story versus trying to find an excuse or a place to fit that into the story?
Does it pass the smell test? So if you're trying to shoehorn it in there and you can find a way to make it work, but you're the only one who recognizes why that works, the reader's going to be like, what? Why? Huh? Where? Huh? And so you're better off saving it for something else, which is an opportunity. You know, like you have this cool thing you get to use later, not that you can't use now.
I had this thing in Martian Contingency that I was extremely stubborn about, which is that in the real world, when you're looking at time on Mars versus Earth, you use sol for Mars and Earth day for Earth. And that's so that people who are talking back and forth can tell whether they're talking about next sol or tomorrow, because they're not lined up. And I was extremely stubborn about including this, and people were not getting it. But it did a bunch of things. I actually needed it technically to be able to talk about those two concepts. It also did, like, it was this really cool world building thing that actually did a bunch of heavy lifting, but it was so hard to explain to people. And so I took an opportunity and I took another scene that was a little bit flat and used that scene to just explain it to the readers as a point of conflict between two characters. And so it was it looking for what else can this do. If it's doing only one thing, you probably save it for the, look, everybody, here are my extras. Here's my acknowledgments, which is where the Mars Speed of Sound went, because I couldn't fit it into the book.
You know, I think...
It's different.
I think about that one time I was shopping and saw some just really cool solar-powered garden path lights. And I was like, oh, these are amazing. They're so neat. And I mean, you can program the cut. I don't actually have a garden path. This is one of those situations where no matter how cool it is, it doesn't belong in my yard because it's just going to end up as like a fairy ring or something. That would have been awesome.
See, that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
For me, this comes back to character, and which is kind of what... Howard was just saying, Howard as a character had no plausible interaction with a garden path. And so there was no point in putting extra time and effort into one because one didn't exist. If my characters can plausibly interact with and be harmed by and make interesting decisions about the cool thing that I'm struggling to include, then it will be fairly easy to include. Whereas if it's just some neat bit of world building that I made up that doesn't actually affect the characters in any way, then yeah, it needs to go.
Hey friends, the 2025 retreat registration is open. We have two amazing writing retreats coming up, and we cordially invite you to enroll in them. For those of you who sign up before January 12th, 2025, how is that even a real date? We're off... As you can probably hear my cat say, we've got a special treat for our friends. We're offering a little something special to sweeten the pot. You'll be able to join several of my fellow Writing Excuses hosts and me on a Zoom early bird meet and greet call to chit-chat, meet fellow writers, ask questions, and get even more excited about Writing Excuses retreats. To qualify to join the early bird meet and greet, all you need to do is register to join a Writing Excuses retreat, either our Regenerate retreat in June or our annual cruise in September 2025. Just register by January 12th. Learn more at writingexcuses.com/retreats.
Heading into the new year, we're all thinking about what our intentions and goals are. It's hard not only to set your targets, but live up to them, especially as writers and creatives in a world that doesn't always seem eager to support you financially. That's why building your financial literacy and starting to work towards a stable financial base is an important aspect of developing your writing career. We talk a lot about the creative tools you need, but peace of mind about your bottom line will give you the space to pursue your goals and develop the career that you want. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing so your money has a chance to grow for you, your kids, and your retirement. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that fits you and your money goals. You don't need to be rich. Acorn lets you invest with the spare money you've got right now. You can start with $5 or even just your spare change. Head to acorns.com/WX or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/WX.
It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What makes a great pair of glasses? At Warby Parker, it's all the invisible extras without the extra cost. Their designer quality frames start at $95, including prescription lenses, plus scratch-resistant, smudge-resistant, and anti-reflective coatings, and UV protection, and free adjustments for life. To find your next pair of glasses, sunglasses, or contact lenses, or to find the Warby Parker store nearest you, head over to warbyparker.com. That's warbyparker.com.
What are some strategies that you have for finding the willpower to finish a project that you have a deadline on, you have to finish it, but you don't want to work on it because you've got five other cool things you want to work on?
What are some strategies for finding the motivation to work on something that has a deadline, but there are other fun things to do instead?
Money.
Spite.
Fear.
they're very primal urges yeah. here.
Do you want to give them actual useful information, Aaron?
I'll try. I don't know. But I think part of it is not thinking of it as motivation. You know what I mean? Because I think there are certain things in life we just do because we have to. But because writing is so personal, sometimes you think like, I will always write when like the moment is there and when I want to. But as somebody who does a lot of deadline work, ultimately it is a little bit about fear. Like I will lose this next opportunity to write something cool. If I burn this bridge, by never getting back to this person when I said I would, I will lose the money that I was going to receive from this project. But part of it is thinking like, I don't actually need to be motivated to work. You just have to work to work, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just about putting down one sentence and saying, that's all I'm going to do for the day. But at least it gives yourself a small goal to get through that doesn't require motivation, just action.
There's an aphorism that I come back to all the time that I think applies to just adulting in general. And it is, don't trade what you want most for what you want at the moment. And I come back to that all the time. Am I doing this thing now because it's just what I want to do now? Or am I doing it now because it's leading me to what I really, really want?
I have a similar thing, which is, what gift can I give to my future self? The other piece that I will say is that one of the tools that I use is coming from dog training. We're working with a dog trainer on Guppy, and while I said money, the fact is that my dog gets a form of payment for doing the things, and it's a joyful form of payment. And so for me, the thing that I have to do. The thing that I have found that is most effective, I can force myself to work, but that just makes work worse. It makes me resent it, and it starts to bleed over into the writing that I'm doing for fun when I'm having to force myself to write. So if I can make it more joyful, that helps. And one of the things that you do with dog training is you do a lot of small sessions. So I will break things into smaller pieces. I will give myself ticky boxes because the joy of watching a ticky box turn green is it should not be that effective. Mm-hmm. It makes me mad that it is.
Our episode spreadsheets. I went to great trouble to program our episode spreadsheets so that all the little check boxes are red until you check them, and then they turn green, and that gives us joy every time we finish recording.
Yeah, so for me, it's like, oh, when I finish this, then I get to do the next piece of it, and I get to cross something off, or like I have literally given myself gold stars before.
I have also done that, and I love a checkbox that I can physically do, but what I'll do is turn it around and say, why do I not want to do this? Mm-hmm. What am I scared of? If I'm scared to take the next step on this project, or I don't know what scene I'm writing next, or when I have to do the big edit when I finish this task. And so when I even just say, like, I don't want to do this because I don't know what I'm doing after, and saying it out loud makes it less scary. And it doesn't mean that the actual fear goes away, but you're like, oh, I'm just afraid. Great. That's easy to be afraid.
That's so much better than the technique I got from dog training, is I wear a shock collar. And then anytime I get off of the main document, it buzzes me. Don't actually do that.
Yeah, you actually need a different trainer.
If I can add to this too, I do actually something before I'm drafting. And some of you heard me speak about this, which is it's very important that when I'm about to start a book, I know how it ends, and I want to be absolutely unhinged and feral about that ending. Because then when I am in those moments where I'm stuck, I will actually turn to the end, because I actually write my final scenes, final line first, and remind myself, like, that's where I'm going, which often, sort of related to you, will help me figure out subconsciously, why am I stuck in this moment? Mm-hmm. Why does this moment feel unmotivating? I will also say, if you do just really require motivation, often for me, it's, I want to get this done so I can go to the shiny new object over here and work on this other thing that is also making me slightly feral and unhinged.
Yeah. Sorry, one last thing, which is like, what I love about all these different answers is I think what they remind me is we're all so different in the ways that we handle this. And I think one way that's good is, how have you ever forced yourself in your life to do anything else? Like if you are like, I always, when I don't want to go to a party, say I can get pizza on the way home, then maybe you're like reward like focused. If you're somebody who, like, whatever the thing is that works for you in other areas of your life can also sometimes be repurposed for your writing life.
When do you call a manuscript done? Because it seems like you could be stuck in the cycle of feedback and improvement just or further?
That you had me at, when do you call a manuscript done?
So here's the thing. Everything can be made better. There is not anything in the world that can't be made better. I think if some people have heard me talk about this when we've been doing office hours, where you've come to me for one-on-one. So I know I've said this multiple times on the ship. If you talk to someone who work on The Princess Bride, which is a perfect film, I am certain that they would say, if I would just had one more day. So for me, the question is not, can this be better? But can this be more of the thing that I want it to be? Like if I've got a chair, if you look at the chair, listener, that you are sitting in right now, there's probably a scuff on it. Could you fix that scuff? Yes. Would it make it more of a chair? Would it make it more useful? Would it make it better for you? No. So when the thing is doing what you want it to do, then it is done. Can you make it better? Yes. But you don't have to.
I think it was Picasso who said, art is never finished, only abandoned. And I have taken that as a gospel truth. I never finish anything. I decide to abandon it, which is very emotionally liberating.
Yeah. One thing that I did not realize when I was very early career, when I was still trying to break in, is how much refinement there still is to do after that point when it is done, right? The agent is going to help you make it better. Your editor is going to help you make it better. The copy editor, the proofreader, like every step of the process will continue that refinement. It doesn't need to be completely perfect and never will be. But it's good to remember this is good enough right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole army of people that's going to help me make it better later.
I do two kind of litmus tests, both as a writer and as an agent. And the first thing I do is I ask myself, whether it's my book or somebody else's, is there like this little voice in the back of your head going like, chapter 3 is really weird, you know? And if the quieter it is, the more I need to go back and look at chapter 3 or, you know, whatever part. The loud voice that's saying, this is horrible and you're blah, 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 blah. That's not your intuition. That is just fear and anxiety and all those things. It's the tiny little bit like, yeah, this scene doesn't make that much sense. And then you go back and fix that one. When I have my agent hat on and I'm editing a client's manuscript, my goal is to make it really hard for the editor to say no. But that goal is not make it perfect and ready to go to the printer. Because that's not my job. And I don't have the power nor the time to do that. But when I look at a manuscript and say, okay, well, the beginning's a little slow. That might derail an editor. Let's fix that. Let's address that and then not worry some hand-wavy things in the middle, because by the time they got there, they're invested and they'll want to know the end.
Most of the time, I am teaching to young kids who haven't written at all, are very interested in it, have never even finished a short story. And so a lot of their questions are around, like, well, how do I know it's done? Like, when do I know? Is it just writing the end? Which oftentimes I'm like, yeah, actually, yes, then you're done. It's done. But I also like to talk to them about how those of us, especially here in the States, we have been raised in a system in which we're taught you have one chance, right? You write an essay, you take a test, you get a grade, the end, that's it. So they often approach writing the same way. And I see adults then struggling with that in adulthood of, oh, I only have one chance to do this. And so I love how all of us can sort of dispel this notion of like, the thing you're writing is you don't have one chance. It's not you write this manuscript, it's done, and that's the only chance you're ever going to get. And so for me, at least, you know, with my process, I know a manuscript is done initially just when I reach that ending point that I've already written. It's done. Then I can give it to my agent. I can start having conversations with my editor. And then even then, as it goes through, you know, developmental edits, line edits, and then we all get down to pass pages where you're reading the proof of your pages. For me, I know it's done when I can read long periods of that book without stopping. and going, oh, this doesn't make sense. Something here is tripping me up. That's when I'm like, it's done. And maybe five or six things over the course of a whole novel, I'm like, I don't know if I landed this. But if it's very few of them, then I'm like, this is done. Like, I can let this go or abandon it, to use that language.
Yeah, the UK edition of Shades of Milk and Honey is three chapters longer and 5,000 words longer than the US edition because they made the mistake of asking me, is there anything you'd like to change? Yes.
And you made the mistake of answering.
And I think that just shows the power of time, because I will sometimes abandon, whether temporarily or permanently, a story because I am like, I am not where I need to be at in order to make this any better. Like, I have done all that I'm doing now is, I always call it like shuffling commas on the Titanic. All I'm doing is making very minute changes. Nothing is changing at the core, because if there's something wrong with the core, I cannot figure out how to change it now. And sometimes I send it out anyway, and it's like, I hope that, you know, the editor at the magazine is like, oh, actually, it is this, or you were wrong, it's fine, I accepted it. And then I'm like, oh, well, maybe that was all in my head. But sometimes it is years later, I'm like, oh, I could have written this different, better story, but the story I wrote was fine for the writer I was at that moment. And I think it's sometimes nice to like acknowledge who you are and what you can do now and worry about what your future self can do later.
So you freeze the document in your trunk cryogenically until you've developed the technology to really fix it. We got time for one more question?
No.
No, we don't. We do not have time for any more questions. What we have time for is homework.
We're going to give you the same homework that we are giving the participants in the Writing Excuses workshop here on The Navigator of the Seas, and that is the daily challenge, asked and answered. Ask someone a question about writing, either to learn more about what they're working on or to work through a project of your own.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends.
This episode of Writing Excuses was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., produced by Emma Reynolds, and engineered by Alex Jackson. Your hosts for this episode were Mary Robinette Kowal, Mark Ashiro, Kate McKean, Aaron Roberts, Howard Taylor, and Dan Wells. This episode was recorded live at the Writing Excuses cruise aboard the Navigator of the Seas.
For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Over the past 75 years, more than 10,000 chemicals have entered our food supply, but the EU allows just 300 additives. At Thrive Market, we prioritize quality, banning over 1,000 ingredients found in conventional grocery stores. Our Healthy Swap scanner helps you find better versions of your pantry essentials without the junk, dyes, or fillers, and everything is delivered right to your doorstep. So shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health at thrivemarket.com/getstarted for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.
What makes a great pair of glasses? At Warby Parker, it's all the invisible extras without the extra cost. Their designer quality frames start at $95, including prescription lenses, plus scratch-resistant, smudge-resistant, and anti-reflective coatings, and UV protection, and free adjustments for life. To find your next pair of glasses, sunglasses, or contact lenses, or to find the Warby Parker store nearest you, head over to warbyparker.com. That's warbyparker.com.
If you're a facilities manager at a university, you know students rely on the cafeteria for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and the occasional late-night snack. So when a dishwasher breaks down and dirty plates pile up, the mess hall can turn messy in the blink of an eye. Enter Grainger. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast delivery, the product you need now is never far away. So you can turn that dishwasher back into a lean, clean washing machine. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.